Hey, and welcome back to the Infamous Podcast. This is your host, Brian Tudor. I'm not currently with Johnny, but Johnny and I just sat down with current Marvel Comics and Image Comics writer, Brandon Montclair. You might know Brandon's name. He's the co-writer on Moon Girl and Devil Dinosaur, one of the hottest new all different books going on in the Marvel relaunch. And he also writes one of my personal favorite books, Rocket Girl from Image Comics, where Amy Reeder is also the artist on that book. We had a lot of fun with this interview. Brandon's a great guy. He's a writer. He served as an editor for DC and Vertigo. He worked on some great projects. So he shares some of that. He shares his thoughts about the comic business, what he's reading, some of his favorite characters. And, you know, he talks about how he got into the business and what it's like to, you know, work as a professional writer. So we had a lot of fun. We hope he comes back on the show really soon, and we hope you guys enjoy this. So without further ado, this is the Infamous Podcast interviewing comic book writer Brandon Montclair. All right. Hey, guys, we're live with Brandon Montclair, who is currently the co-writer of Moon Girl and Devil Dinosaur from Marvel Comics and the writer of one of my favorite books from Image, Rocket Girl. How you doing today, Brandon?
I'm doing great. Thanks.
So, again, thanks for taking the time to sit down with us. You know, we've had a lot of back and forth on Twitter, which when you first reached out, because I did a blog post about Moon Girl and Devil Dinosaur, because I was a fan of, like, you know, even though it was just 9 comics, you know, Kirby's run with that. And then everything that happened with Devil Dinosaur and Cap and Planet Hawk for Secret Wars. So when I saw your guys' book on All New, All Different, I just, you know, was compelled to write about it. And that's kind of where we started talking.
I'm happy to be on the show. And looking forward to talking about I assume you guys have now read the first issue, right?
No, we read.
I read it last night.
I hear you guys talking about it. So
we read it. You know, Rocket Girl number 7 just came out, which is the start of a new arc.
Yeah.
You have an amazing resume. You know, not only from a writing standpoint, but as an editor, you know, for DC, Vertigo, for what looks like many, many years.
Yeah, it was about 4 years I was there, so okay. not super long, but I got to work on a lot of good things. I definitely fit in as much as I could into a small amount of time. Yeah. But it was great because when I first worked there, I worked mostly for Bob Schreck, who's now working for Legendary Pictures. But before that, he worked for Oni. He worked for Dark Horse, was at DC for a while. And then I worked for Karen Berger at DC also, kind of like, you know, directly for both of them. So a lot of kind of titans in the industry. So I got to work on some cool books.
Yeah, I mean, that's awesome. But, we were talking about Day Trippers. I don't know if you heard us. We were going back and forth about that. That was a great Vertigo book.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. I often say that because I worked on so much stuff, and you know, you never like to pick favorites, and sometimes I like to be contrary when I say things, but I'll usually throw out that that's probably the best book I worked on. And I worked on a lot of great books, Day Tripper, it got a lot of accolades. It won, you know, won some awards. People think fondly of it, but despite all of the praise that it's gotten, I still think it's underrated because I think it's one of the best books, you know, that certainly, and not just that I've worked on, but, you know, one of the all time greats, I always thought. So,
yeah, that's awesome. So, like, just going back to the beginning, how did you get into comics?
Well, I've always been a fan of comics. So, like most people who work in the business, so I was always a collector and a reader. I had older brothers, so they're always kind of around. Sometimes people ask, oh, what was your first comic? And I really couldn't tell you because they were just kind of always there. But you know, growing up in the, you know, in the mid-80s on comics was kind of, you know, when I started to, you know, appreciate and think of these things. So, stuff like, you know, as silly as it is, Savage Sword of Conan and Gru by Sergio Aragonés and stuff like that. I was a kid when Dark Knight Returns came out and I liked it as a kid, but you don't really appreciate that stuff.
Right.
But, a lot of Marvel stuff, DC, also a lot of Batman, and then, you know, I live in New York City and I grew up in the New York area, and I would do conventions ever since like seventh grade, buying and selling comics because, yeah, certainly back then the kind of collecting aspect was a bigger part of comics, you know?
Yeah.
And as a kid that appealed to me, At 19, I wound up buying into a store in Westchester, New York, Scarsdale, New York, which is kind of the suburbs mm-hmm. of Manhattan, and did that for a few years. And it was really cool to be own a store when you're 19. When I was in my mid-20s, I didn't think it was so cool anymore. So, so I kind of relocated to California for a couple of years and started working just on the lark on the publishing side. I had never done anything on publishing before that. But I had gone back to school and started as an intern at Tokyo Pop.
Oh, cool.
And that was when they were kind of still cool and interesting. I mean, I read some manga. I wasn't a huge manga mm-hmm. fan, though. But so many of the guys at Tokyo Pop and gals, too, came out of, like, the magazine business or just different things. They really didn't have a comics background. Mm-hmm. So at some point, Tokyo Pop early on wanted to kind of create their own content in the manga style, but still with American creators. And I got to work on that stuff for a couple of years. And by then, between working shows and working for a publisher, I was always at conventions, so I knew a lot of the people. When I came back to New York, I met with Bob Schreck, who I wound up working for, a couple of other people. I had an offer from Marvel and from DC, and worked for Bob at first on Batman and then kind of like special projects in DC, which included like Year 100 and All-Star Superman and All-Star Batman, some of the Matt Wagner stuff, in addition to like kind of the regular Bat books and other odds and ends. So yeah, and stayed at DC for about 4 years.
Nice.
Towards the end of which, moving upstairs to Vertigo. Yeah. And then that was, now it's going on 6 years, I guess, since I've been there. So left on good terms. It was just, as life happens, my wife had our first kid, and I had an opportunity to kind of leave and do the freelance thing because she had a pretty stable job, but also very flexible. She works in, she's a, she was oh, wow. tenure track. She has tenure now as a chemical engineer. So at NYU. So it's kind of cool that I had the kind of flexibility mm-hmm. and she had the flexibility. So someone could always be home with our daughter. And so I tried to get some freelance work and
yeah, no, that's awesome.
It's the kind of short version. I lived in, not too sure. Oh, but yeah.
I was going to say, I lived in Brooklyn after college
what's that?
For a little bit. And we're actually out of Cincinnati.
All right, great. Where are you guys out of?
We both grew up here. I came back. But yeah, it's so cool. Like just kind of like getting to own a store and seeing that side of it. And then, I think it probably is like kind of reflective in some of your writing that you were an editor before. Because like Rocket Girl, it doesn't come out every month, but mm-hmm. it never misses a beat.
Oh no. Yeah. The good thing about Rocket Girl is, it's easy to catch up on if you haven't read the issues. It's not, it's a tough book to put out, but, that's mm-hmm. as much on me as it is on any writer, for sure. But Amy, the artist, is also doing everything on that book. She colors it. She does all the ink. She does the letters. She does a lot of the design. So, it's, at best, it's going to take a couple of months to get an issue done. And then, things kind of get jumbled up.
Was this the
up,
first thing have a new you worked with Amy on now and, with Rocket Girl? Or have you guys been collaborating in the past?
Mm-hmm. Well, we did a one-shot called Halloween Eve before that for Image, which is kind of like a toe in the water. But I know Amy going all the way back to Tokyo Pop, where I was one of the editors in charge of a talent competition that they did called Rising Stars of Manga. And that was her first published work. It was like a 20-page short story. And I was kind of the guy that went through the huge pile of hundreds of stories and then narrowed it down to 20. And then the whole kind of team would bring it down to 10. And I didn't have much interaction with her. I was leaving kind of as soon as she got her in at Tokyo Pop, so I worked on her on just that competition. She wound up doing a Tokyo Pop book, but I always wanted to work with her and Felipe Smith were the two people I always wanted to do work with once I came to DC. And I almost got to work with Felipe up at Vertigo, but it didn't work out. And for those who don't know, Felipe Smith is now writing Ghost Rider, which is I think they've done a couple of series. I don't know if there's any kind of word if it's coming back. I certainly hope it is, right? But he was doing the Robbie Reyes Ghost Rider stuff. But he and Amy were so great, and I was able to work with Amy as her editor on Madame Xanadu at Vertigo. So, yeah, so I knew her really from working at DC, even though I had known her, had first met her previously. But, yeah, she was leaving DC at the time and wanted to do something kind of quick and not think about it, but also not, in her words, kind of not work with an editor, and which is funny because I was an editor of hers for a long time. But she was a little burnt out on the DC machine, which happens. And, and she has since gone back and done, you know, some covers or whatnot, I'm sure. But, yeah, so we did this thing called Halloween Eve, and it was really by the seat of our pants because, as you say, it's tough to get a book out on schedule, but certainly nobody wants to read a Halloween book in November.
Oh, so, cool.
We did a Kickstarter for that, though, and it was successful. It turned out pretty well, and because of that, the format was successful. We did another Kickstarter for Rocket Girl and did it again at Image. And that was, yeah. And then
that's
what we've been working on for a while now.
So the current artist, it's, is it Natasha? Natasha? Bustios? Yeah.
Yeah, I think it's just Natasha, right? As far as I know, right? Yeah, she's from Spain. So there might be.
How's that? Because I know Amy's an artist. So how is it, like, with the two of you co-writing and working with another artist?
Yeah, well, I always kind of, pride myself. I've worked with, as a writer, good artists. I got to work with Amy, Michael Kaluta, Simon Bisley, because, I mean, I knew all these people from editing, but I also, a lot of people talk the talk, but don't necessarily walk the walk of being a writer that sets up an artist. It's actually something that's been kind of going around Twitter the last couple of days also, why, you know, maybe writers get too much credit compared to artists. It's much more time consuming to be an artist, no matter what side of the debate you want to fall on for that. But I've always believed in kind of in whether I was an editor or a writer or any part of the book, that the artist is the most important person in that formula. So it's almost like you want to be a pitcher, right, in the home run derby. You know, you don't want to know how to throw something right down the middle so they can hit it out of the park, type of thing. So I feel that I was always pretty good at that, and Amy has worked for actually a couple of writers who are artists before, Matt Wagner and J.H. Williams, and it can go either way with that, and I think she really appreciates, hey, as an artist, I know I can say this, that, and the other thing, but if I was I want to be somebody I would want to work with. Am I making any sense? Yeah, so between the two of us, I think we kind of are in a position to set Natasha up to do really well. She's also a newer artist. I did a short story with her at Vertigo as a writer for Strange Sports Stories last year or so.
Yeah, I mean,
that's how I first.
Moon Girl has a very distinctive look
to her.
It's not like drawn the Marvel way, and but it's not like some of the DC books, like the Batgirl stuff. It's like got that very Tumblr art feel to it. Like, you know, and it's got shades of that, but it's like a much more refined, you know, style, which is great. And it's also fun because, I mean, how old is it Lunella? Is that how you pronounce it? 10.
Yeah, she's 10. I thought she was 9 for a long time, but it turns out she's 10.
She's super smart, you know, she's a burgeoning Inhuman and everything like that. Mm-hmm. Did you guys, I mean, because she's the new creation here, which, you know, there's been a lot of talk. I mean, like, you know, anytime a new character's created and they're like either female or of color, it's like, oh, it was like a gender switch or an ethnic switch or whatever. And like you guys kind of put your money where your mouth was and created literally a diverse new character that ties back into something that, you know, you either look at fondly or as a joke because, you know, I mean, Devil Dinosaur and Moon Boy. Yeah. So.
or both.
I mean, wasn't there one where Devil Dinosaur actually ate Moon Boy at one point?
I could get into the nitty gritty, but I think that was retconned as being a clone of Devil Dinosaur at some point. But, you know, Devil Dinosaur, as far as Kirby's vision, only lasted those 9 issues, and I think he crossed over into Godzilla once, you know? with Herb Trimpe doing the art. But it was, you know, it's it has being a Kirby creation, yeah, it has Secret popped Wars. Up several times, even just recently, like you said, in Secret Wars. You know, not we. I mean, it's almost we don't go there, but not. But it also doesn't diminish any of that because, you know, and I don't think it's a spoiler, but you read the first issue. Mm-hmm. Devil Dinosaur is plucked from the past, not his current, not wherever he is currently. Which editor is trying to figure out? Yeah. If it might have been in the Savage Land, but now it's post Secret Wars anyway. So who knows what? Who knows what's what? So it doesn't invalidate anything that happened after the Kirby stuff in my mind. Because we're going back to Devil Dinosaurs, the Devil Dinosaur of the past, so to speak. So it's,
yeah,
it's
I
a
loved,
direct sequel.
Yeah, I
love
how you guys
stuff.
Segued that with, and like, you know, a, but I mean, said, we actually saw Moon Boy. Yeah. And, you know, and she's not just reimagined.
Yeah. No, exactly. And I don't see anything wrong with reimagining a character either. I know a lot of people though kind of get upset where they say, mm-hmm. "Oh, you're switching this character or switching that." I don't know. I think, you know, that's for people who maybe don't read the books, because even if you read, you know, if you read Thor, if you read Captain America, there's certainly they're pre-existing characters that kind of pick up a mantle, and there's a whole storyline behind it, right? It's not like they woke up one day and were different genders or races. But that being said, as far as, you know, what, you know, I don't want to talk for other people. So talking for Moon Girl, it was a different character, and it's going to be in a way a legacy. But you know, so is Ms. Marvel, and people I don't hear people complain about Ms. Marvel, because there is, it's not like I said, you didn't wake up and one day it's switched. It's its own thing. It's a different. Character being introduced to the series, and Moon Boy is not erased, right? He got a bit pummeled, and so we'll see, you know, we'll see what his ultimate fate is, I suppose, in a future.
I guess with Devil Dinosaur popping into the future, the Terrigen bomb missed, whatever. We still haven't finished Secret Wars, so I don't think it's super clear what's happened there. How will her status as an Inhuman,
right,
and you know, affect Devil Dinosaur? Will it affect their relationship at all? Is it something where, you know, he'll be protective of her, or is that something maybe too spoilery you don't want to answer?
Yeah, no, it's well, the answer is too spoilery, but just but the setup I think can be clarified. Is she has Inhuman DNA, but she's not an Inhuman yet, because, you know, for those who don't know, again, you don't become an Inhuman until you encounter the Terrigen, right? And in the old Inhuman books, it was a rite of passage. So you lived on the moon, right, with all your, you know, Inhuman friends. And at a certain age, you would walk through the mists and you would transform into something Inhuman, right? But with the Terrigen cloud that's been going around New York City, it's more random, right? And so some people never knew that they were Inhuman, and that was actually Kamala Khan, right? She was walking through Jersey City, encounters the cloud, and all of a sudden is breaking out of the cocoon as Ms. Marvel, right? So Lunella knows that she has the DNA, but is terrified of it, doesn't want to change. And maybe that makes, I think, a lot of sense for a 10-year-old kid who knows that if she gets caught in the rain, basically, right? Because you can't really predict the cloud, and Marvel has been, scientists have been trying to stop it. She is going to transform, and that terrifies her. So her kind of, mission more than anything else is to find a way to counter effect that. And literally to not be an Inhuman. So, I won't give away whether or not she's successful. That's pretty much the whole story we're doing. But I think it's a little bit of a different take. It's not like it's radically, inventing some kind of story that's never been told before, but no, she definitely, her whole character arc is to avoid becoming an Inhuman, you know? So, and being that she is technically in the Inhuman family.
Yeah. No, that was one of the things that drew me something to the book, was the whole Inhuman twist. Being a big X-Men fan and kind of Marvel phasing out the mutants, it's kind of like the next bet.
Right. Yeah,
same similar story. So it's like, okay, I'm trying to I guess let me put it this way. When Secret Wars was announced, like all 10 Marvel books I was reading got canceled. Mm-hmm. So I've picked up, I think I've picked up all but maybe five or six of the Secret War or the post Secret Wars books so far, because I have to rebuild what I'm going to collect from Marvel and what I'm going to read on a regular basis. Mm-hmm. And I'm definitely gravitating more towards the Inhuman stuff because it's interesting. And, you know, this is right in that wheelhouse, which is really cool. Yeah.
Interested in it because of Devil Dinosaur. Right.
Yeah. Well, that's just it. I mean, the Inhuman angle was brought in later, but it, you know, to me, it kind of worked out because it was always going to be Moon Girl. And like you said, you have the kind of history of the moon with, you know, even just in name with the Inhumans and everything else. And kind of this idea that she doesn't want to change and it's about growing up and, you know, can you really stop yourself ever from growing up? She's certainly going to try. And as smart as she is, maybe she'll find a way. But it's great because it also makes sure, and this is important, and this is what I think is actually different about the book. And one of the reasons I think they're not really branding it now as an all ages book, because you think all ages and something out of continuity or something different. The book that certainly my 6-year-old daughter can read and enjoy on a certain level. But at the same time, it is taking place in the Marvel universe. You know what I mean? It's not some kind of side story or Marvel Age or something where it's different, where you're taking the characters. And I mean, she is existing in the same universe as Kamala Khan and as Amadeus Cho and as every other character that's always been there. And again, but the tone of it's going to stay I don't want to say kid friendly, but safe. You know what I mean? For all kinds of readers. And that to me is very interesting. And the Inhuman angle is a part that makes that happen. So if you follow the Inhuman continuity, and like you say, Marvel's investing a lot into it, it kind of shows how Lunella and Devil Dinosaur are connected. But at the same time, we're not really doing a book that's going to have a huge impact on Black Bolt and Medusa and all those other stuff. So if you just like Devil Dinosaur and the concept, it does kind of exist by itself.
Totally Awesome Hulk is going to show up in the fourth issue, right? Yeah. And that's Amadeus Cho's Hulk. Just launched this week. Okay.
Right. Yeah, and like I said, if you've read the, I don't know how many. See, I got a couple of issues ahead, but I think the first Hulk is out. I don't think the second one is. But but Banner is
not having Secret Wars done. Is we don't know where anybody is.
But she's gonna, you know, and when I say she. You wanted to have the big kind of monster fight, and Hulk versus Devil Dinosaur. You can't get cooler than that. So that's going to be a lot of that issue is going to be, you know, Hulk feeding Devil Dinosaur a fire engine. You know what I mean?
That'll be awesome. I want to see that art.
I hope that's a big splash page. So.
I said, 20 pages. They don't give you a lot to work with, but so, I try to.
That's
put,
an interesting point. So as like a former editor, your writing, your pacing is really, really good, especially for how short comics are nowadays. Do you find working with co-writer, is it easier to trim, harder to trim? I think I heard an interview with you guys where you plot it out and she scripts it, if I remember that right.
We're kind of falling into a pattern that, like I said, and every time I answer this question, I'll qualify it because it's maybe for 2/3 of the book or 75% of the book where I plot it and she'll break down the pages. But then even after she breaks down the pages, I'll still go back and I'll re-dialogue a lot of it or tweak it. You know what I mean? So it's almost like I said, a 3-step method. But that being said, Amy is very, very involved, in those first outlines where we break down what we're going to do with the 20 pages. And I'm pretty involved with, what is technically her part, which is breaking down each individual page into actual action. And then I do more dialogue than she does, but she does a lot of dialogue. I mean, the line everyone loves, the only superpower I need is my brain. I can't even say it right. It was Amy's line. So it's like, so that's coming up a lot. So it really is a free for all at the end of the day, but it's starting to have a little bit of structure, you know? As far as pacing, it's tough because when you work with Natasha, it's like working with Amy. You can't really throw nine panel pages up there also. So you have even less room to work with. But at the same time, you don't need to, Natasha can really sell an emotion in one panel. That's all you need. You know what I mean? So you want to, even if it's an action book, even if it's Devil Dinosaur, even if it's Spider-Man, even if it's X-Men, even if it's Punisher, you know, you want to kind of grab the reader's heart a little bit. Natasha can do that. Like I said, you give her one panel on a page and she can nail the emotion and really sell what's going on in Lunella's head without any dialogue, to be honest. So it's good. You want to give her the room to do the best job possible. And you wish you had more pages, but technically you do. It's just the next issue, right?
So you answered pretty much everything with the editor thing and that. Which, like, did you like working on All-Star Superman with Grant? Did you work a lot with Grant, or?
Yeah, All-Star Superman, it's funny because that's a great book. And I love that book, and I always say I probably read that book more than any human being alive because I had, you know, any book that comes through, you got to read 10 times. And then I still pull it off the shelf and read it now. I'm actually teaching a class, and that was one of the, like, just a comics kind of fun class to video game designers. And that was one of the books I made them read. So All-Star was great. As far as editing that book, yeah, there was no editing at all. It was the script comes in from Grant. It goes to Frank Quitely and Jamie Grant. And they knew exactly what they were doing. And Grant at the time was working on a lot of things. So he would, he would turn the stuff in and filter it, and it was great. And there wasn't like anything needed to be changed. So I didn't have a lot of interaction with him. I did have a good amount of interaction with Frank Quitely, just because Frank Quitely likes getting on the phone and talking about books and the weather and everything.
That's awesome.
So I become, friends with Frank Quitely more, and Grant not so much, but, that was a lot of fun working on that book. And it's funny because, again, I was working for Shrek, and, we were also doing All-Star Batman. And I think I wound up just, like I said, it's just when you're working with that level of talent, sometimes all you're doing is trying to make sure that they're getting paid on time. You know what I mean? It's not like you're sitting there working out plots and character beats and everything else. But I think for just whatever reason, like the office rhythm, I would have more interaction on All-Star Superman, and he would have more interaction on All-Star Batman. And All-Star Superman and everything would win the awards and get all the accolades. But I'm a huge All-Star Batman fan. I know a lot of people find it very controversial. But, that book was so fun. And that was like, I was jealous because I said, I wish I was always the one talking to Frank and Jim about that one instead of, this All-Star Superman, which I guess is good. But, And that's, like I said, I'm certainly being playing fun, but. Yeah, it's like, it's amazing to work with. I got to read every Grant Morrison script, and he works full script, and that was a huge benefit for me now that I'm writing, to be able to kind of just have access to that stuff. And Frank worked full script, and it was good stuff, you know what I mean? So I was able to read literally the best of the best and stuff.
Some of the best of the
and
best.
Certainly
Year
helped.
100, the Batman Year 100 is one of my favorite books. That thing was like,
yeah, Batman Year 100 is a lot of fun. Paul, I said this is not announced, but I'll give you guys. I don't know, it's not an exclusive, but he's going to be doing a variant cover for Devil Dinosaur, which would be cool. Yeah, I think for number 3 or 4, so they'll announce it. It's going to be a lot of fun because Paul's a huge fan of the old stuff and Kirby in general.
But
I love Kirby. So Well, like I said, Yeah, we definitely didn't shy away from doing a modern, different take. It's not Kirby's book. But that being said, we love Kirby's book. And the Killer Folk are going to play like a huge role. So, I mean, it's not like we're shying away from the Kirby
Devil
stuff.
Dinosaur beautifully. Yeah. So, and Amy did a great cover. That number one cover with Devil Dinosaur, like being pretty much, 50% of the cover. It's like, that's pretty awesome.
Yeah, well, like I said, I'm biased, but Amy does great work. So, It's a great book, and it's a lot of fun. And you know, Tamara Bonne Villain on the colors, and Travis Landon, who I worked with on DC, who actually lettered All-Star Superman after the first couple of issues. He did the lion's share of that book. Just happened to be the letterer that Marvel landed on this book. So that was great.
Hulk coming in. Totally awesome Hulk, I guess. Whatever you want to call him. Is there anybody else?
Mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah,
all new, all different, totally awesome Hulk, right?
Green anything. Is there anybody else coming into the book
right
further down the line that you can talk about?
Not that I can talk about, but yeah, stay tuned for Hulk. But yes, but more. Like I said, we really take it to heart, as much as this is a Devil Dinosaur book, that it's part of the Marvel universe. And to me, to be able to do that, you have to, you know, you have to see little bits and pieces of other things. And even in the first arc, there's going to be some minor. Kirby creations popping up in a surprising.
This is totally off the line, but it is a Marvel book. The Contest of Champions, where it was a Hydra version of Devil Dinosaur.
Right. I know it was in the first issue. He got killed or something, right? So it was.
In some universe, Devil Dinosaur and Moon Boy were part of Hydra.
Well, yeah, no, he's definitely a fan favorite, and I guess it literally proves the old maxim that everybody is somebody's favorite. You know what I mean? But that was the thing, and some people weren't all in, and maybe still aren't on Moon Girl and Devil Dinosaur. But I do remind people that the old book was Devil Dinosaur, it wasn't Moon Boy and Devil Dinosaur. You know, it was, and he was a big part of it, but this book started as a Devil Dinosaur pitch. Became Devil Dinosaur and Moon Girl, and then became Moon Girl and Devil Dinosaur. Literally, so I'm proud of the evolution of the title, that it really does put her first as a new character. She doesn't take the name in a kind of way to honor Moon Boy. She's just
name, really.
She's just kind of a random J.J. Abrams type of.
Like, cool, her name is Moon Girl.
Exactly.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah, exactly. But like I said, we don't shy away from the original stuff. We totally embrace it. But that being said, we're not Jack Kirby. Nobody is, right? But certainly me and Amy and the stuff we do on Rocket Girl and Natasha being who she is, it's not going to be close to that stuff. But that doesn't have to be a bad thing, you know what I mean? So
And then definitely the first issue, I could tell, you know, you were having fun writing it. Amy's having fun writing it. And obviously she's having fun doing the art. So,
I mean, everyone's having a blast on this book. And the editor and the editorial in Marvel has been great. And to their credit, even like when we first announced it, we got a really good announcement and a lot of heat off of that. But Marvel, and you worry. The reason I can tell is because I was an editor, right? They're like, oh, it's going to be great. You know, you're blowing smoke or something. But Marvel knew even before it broke big that they had a feeling that it was going to break big. And again, this isn't like Doctor Strange, right? It's not going to be their number one book. But heck, for Devil Dinosaur, you know what I mean? It's the buzz and the numbers have been pretty good. But to Marvel's credit, they were able to maximize that because they had a feeling that it was going to, like, hey, the stars have aligned right on this one. So we think it's going to be great. And it's funny because, you know, it's more Amy than me, but Amy, because it takes her so long to do an issue of Rocket Girl, wanted to have more of a monthly presence on the show. So she could do covers, but I said, well, why don't you, you know, she's a good writer. I said, why don't you hold out and find something where you can not just do covers, but maybe you can do like some redesign and write it. Why not? And it's great that I'm co-writing, but the kind of original, not the idea for the series, but the idea of Amy doing more was just to kind of get out there and do it. And that being said, you know, it's all a lot of fun and she does a really good job of it. And, like I said, but now we just have a kind of you have to make it your own thing at the end of the day. Is I guess what I'm trying to say.
So Rocket Girl, just real quick.
Yeah.
So like Dae Young's such a really she's such a cool character because she's she understands in the past there's things she can and can't do, but she's such a hero at heart. She can't help but like save people. Like when you guys were developing her, like, was there an inspiration for her? Was this strictly, you know, from, you know, the back of your brain, or, you know, where did this character come from? Because, like, you know, Teen Police New York, that's completely original.
Well, yeah. No, yeah. I mean, yes, for my brain in a sense, but then I feel like I have to give credit where there are influences. Like, there's a lot of Carrie Kelly from Dark Knight Returns in her kind of personality and her attitude. But yeah, that was to put it in, and I've talked about this before, but to me, a lot of people do teen stuff wrong in the sense of that they're always getting into trouble. You know what I mean? And certainly teens are prone to get into trouble, and I got into trouble as a teen. But there were a lot of times. I mean, Dayoung is just not very smart because she hasn't experienced things. You know what I mean? So as much as she's endearing, I think she's in a lot of ways very flawed by seeing the world in black and white. And I say, oh, black and white, like a policeman in black and white. And she sees it in black and white, like an 80s Schwarzenegger or Stallone action movie, where she can just go in and say, hey, I'm going to do the right thing, because you haven't been jaded by experience, where you say, well, you know, yeah, it's not right to, cheat on your girlfriend, but, you know, things happen, and oh, it's a terrible world that it goes in. I'm trying to think about high school drama that you might have to do. So they can see the world, I think, still in black and white, whereas as an adult, you're like, oh, well, how can you really make a judge? And then that, twisting that on its head, making that the slippery slope, right? 80s New York being very corrupt, and that's kind of be extrapolated from there for the current 2013 rather than what actually today is. And yeah, teenagers, they can kind of see the world and right and wrong, and she's so dedicated to her belief that she's willing to risk her entire world, right? That being said, the underlying thing as well, is she really even making the big decision? And then subtly under that, which is now starting to come up in the book, I think, and again, I'm not spoiling anything, is can you manipulate? Are they being manipulated if the teen police for that type of thing? So, yeah, I mean, as far as characterization, it comes from a lot of places. But that idea was in my head of, hey, everyone does a teen book about teens acting badly. When in a lot of ways, they're very conservative,
they only know black and white,
because they don't know any better. You know what I mean? Yeah, exactly. So, and that's what I kind of wanted to play on that. And I think a lot of times there is kind of a war on youth in our culture. You know what I mean? Or like, you know, a little bit of a crazy fetishization of youth, right? Not to get too psychological about it. So that kind of just all
like that whole first issue was all.
Yeah. I think so.
You know,
and
every news story we've heard about, you know, a teenager doing something wrong and a cop overreacting happened within like a 4-page span. And it was kind of like,
Yeah. And it can certainly be serious business these days, but I don't know. I always go back to it. It's like, you know, one of the characters I always wanted to write would be Robin, you know? So it's funny that you mentioned that. Because it's like, oh, I got to go to school and be a superhero. That's like so ridiculous to me. You know what I mean? It's like, you know, it's not what a kid would do. First of all, second of all, I think what Robin does is pretty important and might supersede pretending that he's a regular kid going to school. You know what I mean? For all the craziness that they try to shoehorn that into. But it's, you know, you talk about, you know, sometimes people talk disparagingly about comics as adolescent kind of power fantasies, right? So, well, if you actually have an adolescent character, they should be having a huge power trip. They should love flying through the city, fighting crime, throwing people off of buildings, and doing everything that superheroes do. They're living the dream, and that's certainly my dream, starting in seventh grade, selling comic books, and every kid who does read it, to be able to do all of that stuff. When I approach Rocket Girl, it's for an adult audience, but it really is like, what would a teen really do? It's not for a parental audience. It's and certainly Moon Girl and Devil Dinosaur, and Amy is always worried that I'm going to get myself in trouble because you read so much stuff that's quote unquote for kids, and it's for their parents. You know what I mean? It's for something that a mom can give their kid and feel good about and be didactic in some sense. This is really about, you know, what a kid would want to do with a giant red dinosaur. And a lot of that is self-interest, right? Well, I can use him to get all these things that I always wanted to in order to, you know, she thinks altruistically, I can, not just right. for me, but I can save the whole world from this kind of, what she considers an inhuman plague. But then again, part of the story, like any story with a young protagonist, is about growing up, you know? So she's going to certainly learn to appreciate Devil Dinosaur as a person instead of as a means to an end.
Like,
as silly as
you're
that
very much
sounds
in the vein of Chuck Dixon's run on Robin yeah. with Tim Drake.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And that was like that was a long, great run. That
you can argue all day. Like, remember, I'll fight to the death. Tim Drake was the best Robin ever. You know.
Yeah, it's funny because it's. I mentioned briefly that I was teaching all young, younger readers, and it's like, yeah, they all love Tim Drake. They all love Batman Beyond. They all love Teen Titans Go. And when you look at the comics market and how much, and I say that I can say this because even I'm working for Marvel now, but DC is kind of my tribe. DC getting their ass kicked by Marvel, right? It's like, yeah, you're not getting it. It's you really should, if you're going to make a Green Lantern movie, put Jon Stewart in it, because that's what the demographic that Marvel kicks your ass with would rather see. It's not that they'd rather see.
I mean, we've talked about that a couple times on the show.
How does it make sense to me?
You know, like one of the things like that we both grew up, like the main staples of my pull list, you know, from 10 years old on were Batman, Robin, Green Lantern, and Spider-Man. And I went from getting most DC books to now the majority of my books are Image and Marvel. And I just get the Robin Grayson books from DC. And then I get Green Lantern, but I haven't read it in 3 years just because I have every issue since like 92. So.
Yeah, it's definitely like, you know, I'm 40 years old. I've been reading comics for like 25 years.
So old.
And just the whole, you know, evolution of the books. It's like DC was the powerhouse when I started reading, and Marvel was kind of like, oh, you know, those guys over there. And Image was just coming into. And it's like now they talk about Image as a bit, you know, being part of the big three. And I'm when I started, there was only the big two. And it's kind of awesome.
Yeah, it's, I mean, and that thing's, it changes and changes back. But DC's been, I think DC's problem, and this is, you know, a topic for another show, obviously, but is that they don't try to be DC. They're trying to be Marvel. And that's a cheap shot to take, but I really think. It's not just in the tone of the Batman v Superman : Rise of Justice or whatever the absurd title is to that movie. Even how the kind of books get made behind, how they want to have an event, how they want to kind of attract talent, how they want to be even like I said, the behind the scenes DC people, and a lot of them are ex-Marvel now, so maybe that makes sense. But it's DC has different strengths, so. To me, and DC, and this has nothing to do with quality. It just has to do with, even though Marvel is now owned by Disney, it's still its own little company. Where DC has been a big part of a big company, Warner Brothers, for a long time. To try to beat Marvel at Marvel's game is like fighting with one arm tied behind your back. But like I said, that's that's a topic for another day.
Just needs to let DC be DC. Yeah. And Warner Brothers be Warner Brothers. And it's one of those things.
Yeah. Yeah, but it's not Warner Brothers stopping DC from being DC. I think it's DC stopping DC from being DC.
It seems that in the last 5 years, I've just not been turned on by any of their books. And that's what I want to, you know, when I look at books, because, you know, you look at previews and you see what's coming out, and it's like, I want to read something and go, you know what, I want to pick that book up. And DC's not really doing much of that right now.
Right. Yeah, it's been tough. I mean, obviously they have they do killer sales on Batman. You know what I mean? And some of that other stuff. And there's stuff that I've liked. You know, it's funny. I almost don't say it anymore because, like, oh, what do you like from
DC? That's not the thing anymore.
Dial Sorry, Age, and then I realize that's been canceled for 2 years. I do like the new Dr. Fate art and writings, and you know, Paul Levitt's been around a million years, but he's so, doing like, a real just fresh book.
Overall comics, what are you reading right now?
Well, Dr. Fate, I am for real. This he said, like, yeah, I was reading a lot of like miniseries, a lot of stuff's in the middle of it, right? But I loved Starlight, so now I'm reading Huck.
That was an awesome book.
I loved Chrononauts, you know. So like I said, Huck's the new one. Yeah, I've been keeping up on the Marvel stuff. I actually like the Contest of Champions book as much as it's not in continuity. Was mm-hmm. pretty cool. I read Hulk and I liked Hulk. I like Ascend, the Image book that's coming out. I read Saga like everyone else does, and I think it's the greatest book. And we're living through, you know, what I got to do, but a lot of people didn't get to, you know, Sandman Monthly. I think that's the type of book Saga is. Yeah, so I mean, I do. What's that? Towards the, I did not from the beginning, but yeah, I went backwards and then forwards with it.
Like
towards the end,
I think I read Preacher Monthly after like a success year. Yeah, but it's like, you know, Saga's
Yeah, Doctor Strange. I love the new Doctor Strange, like everybody else. That's another character I wish I could always work on. And so sometimes I get contrary with that. What's that? What's that? You know what's a really good book that not enough people are reading? Is Black Hood, the Archie Dark Circle book. That's actually, that's that Dwayne Wazerski. He has got a crazy name. I've never like really latched onto any of his other stuff. I think he did Moon Knight for a little while and other things. But that Black Hood book is really, really well done. People should be reading it. So there's a lot of things. We Can Never Go Home. You guys check that out. That's that Matt Rosenberg book by
Black Mask Studios. Yeah, I read one of the previews of that.
That's being collected, I think, this week for $10, and it's worth it. And it's got a kind of a crazy history of. All due respect to the creative team on that book, I don't think it's fans. There's like a weird speculator thing for it. Like, so some of the printings of We Can Never Go Home go for like $100 on eBay. And a lot of times when you read a story about the book, it's about, hey, check out this variant that went for a crazy price. This is going to be the next Walking Dead. And they never talk about the actual book, which is pretty solid. So that's another one. I do read a lot of stuff. I read a lot of old stuff also. You know, even if it's not rereading, it's stuff that I never read, but I found in dollar bins and put a run together. You know, the end of Power Man and Iron Fist, which was even a little bit before my time. Mm-hmm. I was a big Quantum and Woody fan, the Christopher Priest and Jim Owsley stuff, Doc Bright. I'm not a huge fan of the new series, of the new creative team, I should say. But discovering that the last 20 issues of Power Man and Iron Fist were basically like Quantum and Woody was like, it like blows my mind. So even there's good stuff to be had, like I said, in the dollar bins these days.
Yeah, the dollar bin is great. Yeah. Well, hey. You know, I mean, this seems like a great ending point. Thank you for sitting down with us. This has been awesome. Good luck with Rocket Girl and Moon Girl and Devil Dinosaur. What else do you have coming up? Anything?
Okay. That's it. Do I have anything else coming up? No, that's it for now. There is other stuff, and you know, obviously more Rocket Girl as soon as can be. That's it for now to announce, but any other announcements you can, you know, I'm easy to find on Twitter, and if I got anything to say, you're not going to miss it from me and or Amy for that matter.
Thanks for sitting down with us.
Okay, and there you have it. That was our interview with Brandon Montclair. He was awesome. We loved it. Hopefully Brandon comes on the show again soon. In the meantime, you can find him at brandonmonclair.com. He's at bmonclair on Twitter. And links are in the show notes. And as always, you can find us at the Infamous Podcast, or sorry, at infamouspodcast.com. You can actually type it theinfamouspodcast.com and it'll get you there. We're Infamous Podcast on Twitter and Facebook. I'm Brian Tudor. I'm at Brian Tudor on the Twitters and the Instagram. Johnny's not with me right now, but he's J. Michael Podorf on Instagram, and he's Johnny Podorf on Twitter. So guys, make sure you follow along with us and the show. Yeah, and if you have any questions, email us at theinfamouspodcast@gmail.com. And we always appreciate the 5-star reviews. It helps us move up, and you know, it helps us to get awesome people like Brandon on our show to, you know, hopefully answer some questions that you might have about the comic book industry. Anyway, everyone have a great week. We'll see you guys on a regular Friday show. And yeah, so later.